I'm Sally Farah, and this is Joshua Coors. We're calling from New York City. And first of all, congratulations on your article, How the VA Abandons Our Vets, in this week's edition of The Nation, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Wonderful article, by the way, and really have enjoyed reading it. Well, I don't know if enjoyed is the right word, but why don't you give us a little background on the background story of Sergeant Juan Jimenez.
Sure. Sergeant Jimenez served in Iraq. He earned two Purple Hearts there. Tragic situation. He mm-hmm. was struck in the face by shrapnel from a roadside bomb, and those wounds led to seizures, memory loss, all kinds of physical problems. When he came back and filed for disability pay for his seizures and headaches and other ailments, mm-hmm. they rejected his claim. They said his physical problems were not from his service in Iraq. They were caused by drinking too much Red Bull.
Really? Yeah.
And with that, they rejected his disability claim. He obviously was stunned and furious.
Mm-hmm.
And he gathered together with a group of wounded vets, an association with the Veterans for Common Sense. And they sued the government.
Mm-hmm.
It was an extraordinary trial. It brought top officials from the VA onto the stand in federal court in San Francisco to discuss, really for the first time under oath, why they were denying care to wounded soldiers.
Mm-hmm. That is an amazing story, and it's been going on for, over 3 years at this point? His whole struggle with the VA since his return home?
His personal struggle
mm-hmm.
has been going on for about 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he was wounded in 2004. But this larger issue of wounded vets being denied benefits has been going on for generations.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Sally, I don't think most Americans even realize that when soldiers come back wounded from Iraq to get benefits for those wounds, they first have to prove
right.
that their wounds came from war. This was a shock, certainly, to Sergeant Jimenez,
mm-hmm.
and even for a man like him who thought that would just be a technicality,
mm-hmm.
a man who still has shrapnel embedded in his skin.
Right.
It was a lot of significant hurdles to cross, and he's just one of thousands
mm-hmm.
in this situation. We spoke last time about soldiers who were being misdiagnosed and denied medical care
right.
because military doctors were being pressured to diagnose them with a pre-existing condition.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, you have soldiers coming back with legitimate ailments, and they have to gather together a case,
mm-hmm.
like a lawyer would, to prove their wounds. Oftentimes, they have to gather buddy statements,
right.
statements from witnesses who were there during the rocket attack or mortar explosion. Those witnesses died during the attack. Now they have no witnesses.
Right.
Sometimes they have medical paperwork, but even in Sergeant Jimenez's case, he saw how that was complicated. Jimenez came in for treatment at the VA, had a seizure while under VA watch, and was actually given medication
mm-hmm.
for his epilepsy. But when it came time to give him benefits, the VA raider, the one that decides whether you get benefits and just how much, said there wasn't significant evidence to prove that he was actually having seizures.
Even though he was observed having one
at the VA.
At the hospital, yes.
That's right.
Yeah. Wow. Poor guy. I liked one of your sentences in your article, just a quote from your article, and you say, you might think that when soldiers return wounded from Iraq, it is assumed that they were wounded in Iraq. Not so. And just you go continue to talk about just the huge hurdles that these guys have to go to. Can you talk a little bit about some of the hurdles that they have to cross to prove that they were wounded?
Well, again, gathering buddy statements is one aspect of it, to gather witnesses as one would as a prosecutor for a trial. Another aspect that's been a huge challenge for a lot of these soldiers is in filing for disability claims. They cannot pay a lawyer
mm-hmm.
to do the paperwork for them. And Sally, I have to tell you, as someone with an Ivy League education, it was still extraordinarily tough for me to keep up with the legal mumbo-jumbo at this trial for a soldier coming back with brain damage after a blow to the face. It's almost incomprehensible how they would be able to wade through a 26-page filing that has to do with medical and financial status, all kinds of relationship information, all by yourself without any legal assistance.
Right. And you were saying in your article that this was like a Civil War ruling, the inability of soldiers to have legal counsel. Is that right?
That's right. It goes back to the Lincoln administration. The Lincoln administration was concerned that soldiers coming back wounded from the Civil War would be taken advantage by lawyers who were seeking a quick buck.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did was they capped the fees that lawyers can charge at $10. You fast forward today
right.
to today's prices, $10 won't lure a lot of lawyers to take your case. And so right now a lot of these soldiers are on their own. The VA officials had some very interesting explanations for this. First, I spoke with Dr. James Terry, head of the VA's Board of Appeals, and he said that he has a PhD, but even if he only had a third grade education, he could probably fill out the form.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the veterans there in the hall were not too pleased
sure.
by that kind of attitude.
Sure.
And I think it was backed up by the VA spokeswoman, Carrie Childress, who tried to explain the lawyer ban by saying it was a protection
mm-hmm.
of poor veterans.
Poor vets, yeah.
Poor vets. She was saying that if rich vets were able to hire high-priced attorneys, they could potentially get more benefits, and poorer soldiers would get less benefits. So to protect the integrity of the system, they decided to keep the ban in place and decline all soldiers the right to hire an attorney.
Mm-hmm. The whole thing is so cruel because you when you think about these poor guys with injuries, PTSD, maybe memory loss, having to go through all of this stuff in the enormous amount of time, you're saying that there's an average 6 month waiting list, but that appeals, which are really common, can take an additional several years, right, to be processed?
That's right. Right now, the waiting list that a veteran gets onto when he applies for benefits is 650,000 veterans long.
Mm.
It's a long line to wait through.
That's huge.
And just how long that is in time
mm-hmm.
was really a central portion of this debate in federal court. The VA was saying that that's about 6 months
sure.
of
yeah.
waiting for them to handle a claim. I think many in the audience will probably be shocked at that alone, that wounded soldiers coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan have to wait 6 months
mm-hmm.
to receive their benefits. Well, as many of the people on the stand revealed, those are really twisted figures to make a rosier portrait of the VA. 6 months to resolve a claim, well, as you mentioned, it depends on what you consider resolved.
Mm-hmm.
If a soldier accepts the decision
mm-hmm.
of the VA, we're talking about an average of 6 months, but many appeal their decision.
Sure.
For them, it takes an additional 3.5 years. And again, to the meaning of resolved, another way, according to VA statistics, that a case can be resolved is by the soldier killing himself.
Right, right. And that was one of the most shocking and sad aspects of this report, Joshua, that the death of a soldier after he comes back is kind of helps the statistics here and the numbers.
That's right. A death is considered a resolved claim.
Right.
And there's another bit of twist in those figures when you start discussing what it means to have a claim. By claim, the veterans who were there in the audience figured they meant a disability claim.
Mm-hmm.
Coming back wounded, filing for disability benefits. But it turns out with the VA statistics that a claim also includes pension claims.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Paper filings that take just a few hours
right.
on occasion.
Right.
So you could have one veteran who comes in, his case takes a year. You'll have another that comes in to file a few forms for a pension. his case takes an hour or two.
Mm-hmm.
After that, they can legitimately claim there's an average processing time of 6 months.
Sure. Yeah. The I would like to mention you had referenced the VA's official training guide, and a statement from that, a quote from that is that the clinical picture of PTSD is relatively easy to fabricate. So they urge doctors to track down documents from parents or from the soldiers' families and teachers and to kind of help with this decision-making, this horrible decision-making that's going on. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, that goes back to why soldiers have to build these cases to set up evidence for their wounds. As the VA spokesman says in the article, a lot of these soldiers would either be going to jail or to the military, and as such, they're not particularly figures you'd want to trust to report accurately their own wounds. They could report them inaccurately and then be receiving benefits they truly didn't deserve. And that statement is really echoed by the VA manual. The VA manual says that PTSD is pretty easy to fake, and so doctors at the VA, when talking to wounded veterans, should carry a true level of suspicion when discussing their ailments. In fact, many of the VA doctors have also talked with disappointment about the internet and how veterans can go there to learn about PTSD and other war-related ailments, because using that information, they claim, that gives them more tools to fake an injury and thus receive benefits they don't deserve.
So these poor guys come back and they're not only denied the care they deserve because they've served their country, but they are insulted in the process and treated with suspicion. The whole thing is just...
And Sally, it's a particularly bad time for that structure to be in place right now. According to recent study, 18 veterans are committing suicide every day. In 2005, that was 6,250 suicides. More soldiers are dying in America after returning from Iraq than have died on the battlefield there in the Middle East.
Gosh. You know, Joshua, I'm so grateful that you've done this research and that you're bringing this information. I'm so glad to hear this information and to share this information with our progressive community here in Moscow. Can you talk a little bit about this lawsuit, the result of the lawsuit, because that's kind of more bad news as well, isn't it?
For the veterans, it certainly is, and they're appealing the lawsuit. The basic suit was not to get benefits to any of the individual veterans in the case, but to ask for a radical restructuring of the VA so that this proof system would be altered. The head of Veterans for Common Sense, the veterans group that spearheaded this lawsuit, suggested a different structure in which benefits come immediately to the wounded veterans, and then there'd be an audit system where, just like the tax filings, the government would look back on a few of the claims to see whether everyone is above board. The VA has been very hesitant to allow others to handle their portion of this process. And so the soldiers went to the judge, Judge Samuel Conte, who himself is a World War II veteran, a Nixon appointee, asking him to restructure the VA to allow quicker benefit for veterans. Conte released a decision which basically said that the veterans were right about the facts of the case, that soldiers truly are suffering and not receiving benefits as fast as they need to, and also receiving the comprehensive mental and physical care that they need. But he didn't feel like he had the jurisdiction to step in and alter the system, and so he decided best to keep his hands off.
Well, that's a congressional issue, I think, isn't it? And actually, it's part of a larger story. It's part of the whole sort of pulling money from social systems and from the things that help Americans to this war itself, this war effort itself. Isn't this a money issue?
Well, there's certainly financial concerns. I think that's part of it. But I think it's a larger debate about who has control of the VA. the VA doesn't want to pay for outside doctors. They want to keep, as one of the doctors said, a paternal control over veterans' care. And that means not having the veterans group step in and say, this is how
we should be running a
government organization.
Mm-hmm.
It was a real blow to these veterans, especially to Sergeant Jimenez, who was confused about that ruling. He said, if the judge sees what's going wrong here, why isn't he stepping in to solve it?
Mm-hmm.
Others on the outside saw this as a long shot case, that the veterans wanted something like Brown versus Board of Education, in which the judiciary would step in and restructure a key government organization. They are appealing. Right now it's going to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and I'll certainly let you know when we hear back from them.
Good, yeah. So tell us about Sergeant Jimenez himself. How is he doing now, and what was the upshot of his appeal and his particular case?
His appeal for seizures and headaches is still pending. He has gotten benefits for PTSD, stomach ailments, and a few of his other physical problems. He really came back gravely ill with a host of medical issues, and the pressure because of that led to his marriage collapsing. He jokingly told me that this job he has now, working for Federal Express on the tarmac of a Los Angeles airport, he likes it because with that job, he doesn't have to talk or associate with anyone.
Wow.
A lot of these veterans come back, and without the rehabilitation that they're seeking from the VA, a lot of them gather in their room, shut the door, stay in the dark, and really separate from those who love them most.
Yeah, so he's getting a little bit of treatment, but overall needs so much more, sounds like.
I think it's going to be a long road for his recovery, and I've actually heard from his family. They're working to stand behind him and help him as well. But I think it's going to be many years before he can ever get back to where he was.
Mm-hmm. Right. Joshua, do you want to touch on a little bit one of your other articles that I would like to mention? We're speaking with Joshua Kors, whose cover story in this week's The Nation, is that right? That's the current one?
That's right.
Is entitled How the VA Abandons Our Vets, Joshua Kors. Joshua has a website as well, joshuakors.com. Is that right?
That's right.
And
listeners can access all of my articles there at joshuakors.com,
right.
K-O-R-S.
So I would certainly encourage people to go to this website and read this article, previous articles that we spoke about a few months ago, dealing with veterans' issues and other things, too. Joshua, you have a wonderful website and a great writing style and very good information for those of us that are interested in just a number of different issues. Do you have any thoughts before we close out? Do you have any thoughts about, we've just been through a couple of big presidential events, the Republican National Convention and the Democratic National Convention the week prior. Do you have any thoughts about the two parties or the two candidates specifically and veterans' issues and how important those will be for these guys?
I think veterans' issues is something that everyone cares about. What's great about this struggle that veterans are having is that everyone cares about it, left or right. There really is no partisan divide. How they go about it is certainly something that's been a ground for contention. As you know, the Democrats recently supported the 21st Century GI Bill. The Republicans did not, saying it would cost too much and be too much of an incentive for soldiers to leave the military. So there are different approaches on how to deal with things. But I think everybody, and this is certainly borne out by the VA committee alone in Congress, both the Democrats and Republicans are there and expressing a lot of frustration with the way in which the VA is handling these veterans. I think a change in the White House isn't the key issue here. It's really the change of the culture at the VA. Think of Michael Wolkoff, the Deputy Undersecretary at the VA, and his testimony, which I should mention, was very Alberto Gonzalez in style. He must have repeated the phrase, "I don't know, I can't remember," over 40 or 50 times.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
He displayed an attitude when talking about the statistics that I think was very revealing for the veterans that had traveled a long distance to be there in the San Francisco courtroom. One of those issues was about their error rate. According to VA figures, a very low error rate, but also according to their same figures, a high rate of losing veterans' medical files.
Yikes.
So the veteran's attorney pressed him on that and said, how could you have these two items side by side? Mr. Wolkoff said, well, that's really easy. We don't consider losing veterans' medical files a mistake.
Wow. Huh. I worked for years in the healthcare system. That is a mistake. That is a problem.
The veterans lawyers also really wanted to press him about a recent RAND Corporation study. Perhaps you heard this one. It was front page on every paper talking about 320,000 soldiers coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan with brain damage and 300,000 coming back with broken nervous systems, PTSD. The lawyers wanted to get his opinions of that severe demonstration of need. And Mr. Wolkoff said, you know, I haven't read that study, so I really can't comment.
Well, it's up to journalist Joshua to keep all of us informed. Totally appreciate your willingness to share with us and your good reporting, and really looking forward to your next articles, because I'm sure there's lots of work ahead of for all of us, isn't there?
Sally, thanks for having me on again.
Thanks so much. Thanks, Joshua.
Well, okay.
That was Joshua Coors, wonderful young journalist whose article in The Nation is required reading for all of us.